This is Michael from Colorado, a proud Patreon supporter of IVNB Podcast, and you're listening to the best marginal analysis out there, IVNB.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this midweek episode of the IVNB podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and on this episode, I'm joined by Andy. How was the week treating you, Andy?
Hey, it's treating me all right so far. I still have a few days to go, so we'll see.
There's still plenty of time for things to go south. Real quick, before we get started here, we are hosting an Iowa Cubs meetup. You can find the information at ivnv.com/Iowa, June 6th. Is that right, Andy? I don't have it in front of me. Okay. June 6th. We have a handful of free tickets, and once those are gone, you can just get general admission tickets. If you would like to claim any of the remaining free tickets, you can email me, corey@ivnv.com. That's C-O-R-E-Y. At ivnv.com. We'll start up the afternoon probably at El Bait Shop there next to Principal Park. We had a lot of fun last year when we did this. And it's worth mentioning that if you have kids, they are more than welcome. Andy, Kurt, and I will be bringing our wives and kids. So this is this one's a family-friendly event, but still plenty of beer.
For the family.
Right. <It's a> family. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to getting over there to Des Moines and to Principal Park. I know this kind of sounds weird, but I'm hoping that we get to see Don Roach pitch. I understand how bizarre that sounds, but I find him really intriguing, and I think we're going to see him with the Cubs if he keeps pitching like he is. But
yeah, that's what I was going to say, is he's pitching well down there, and stands the reason that the Cubs probably at some point this season will need a guy who's ready to go down there, and he looks like he could be that guy.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, really, it's kind of surprising that as the bullpen was unstable here for the Cubs, you know, for the last two or three weeks, I'm kind of surprised that he didn't get called up, but I don't know. You know, he has major league experience, and he's pitching as a starter in Iowa right now, but he has experience as a reliever. So,
yeah, but no doubt we'll see him at some point.
Yeah, Don Roach. That's who I'm excited about.
Well, our options to get excited about dwindled a little bit, you know, within the past month. But there's still some players to watch down there, no doubt.
Yeah, Javi will probably still be there. So, but really, I mean, it's just a fun place. I mean, last year when we went there, Javi was there, but, you know, Bryant wasn't there yet. Obviously Addison Russell wasn't. And, I can't really remember too much about that team other than Javi. Cause I mean, I think that's just who we were paying attention to, but.
Well, that left fielder that the Cubs had for a minute.
Right, I'm trying to think of his name.
I can't think of his name, but. Anyway.
Yeah. So another thing is that we did not do one for April, but one of the perks of certain Patreon levels is that we do a Google Plus hangout during a Cubs game. We're going to do that next Thursday night. The Cubs are out in San Diego for that game. It starts at 8 p.m. Central, and I'll be sending out more information through Patreon and the Patreon supporters Facebook group. So look for information on that. So after we played that voicemail at the end of our last episode, we got another voicemail, and I think that what we might do is, well, no, we are going to do, is include voicemail at the end of our episodes. So you can use this to, you know, obviously leave a voicemail like the last one was. You're more than welcome to do that, because I found it entertaining and other people did too. I got some feedback that people really enjoyed it. But if you would like to weigh in on something, you know, Cubs related, or share a thought on the Cubs, or if you have a beer suggestion or anything like that, you can call those in. You can leave a voicemail through our iOS app. Click inside the app, you click contact, and then click call the show. It's not a click. I guess it's a tap. Tap contact, then tap call the show. Or you can call 309-517-0624. That goes straight to voicemail. So you're not going to like call me at 2 a.m. and I'm not going to answer it or anything like that. So don't worry about that. And if you do leave a voicemail and you just mess up, just call again and I'll throw the bad one away. You know, we're not going to embarrass anybody. But I think this could be kind of fun. And I know that as sports fans, you surely have opinions on this team, and we would like to include those in our podcast episodes.
Pretty soon the young people will be like, get out of here with your clicks, grandpa. It's taps now, buddy.
I'm showing my age. So let's get into Cubs talk. The Cubs won the first two games of this series with the Mets. The third game is in progress right now. Andy, do you have any comments on what we've seen so far this week?
Oh, do I ever? I'm full of comments. this has been a fun series. I was really looking forward to the series because I haven't really had a chance to see some of the highly touted pitching of the Mets.
Right.
So it started off on Monday against one of their young pitchers, DeGrom. And of course, that game got off to an amazing start with Bryant and Rizzo going back to back in the first inning. And that was Bryant's first home run at Wrigley. So that right off the bat had me like really pumped up and excited. And then not much happened the rest of the game, really. although the Mets made it kind of close and kind of nerve wracking at the end. But
yeah, it's kind of like, I was just going to say, it's kind of what we've seen so far this series is kind of what we hoped to see in that Cardinal series, that four game series with the Cardinals. And I kind of go back, I don't mean to go back to that series, but I still say that series was not as bad as it seemed. I think there were a lot of positives to take away from that series, but maybe this is what we're seeing is, you know, I think the Mets have kind of overperformed so far this spring. And so maybe this is kind of a four game series with a team at a step down from the Cardinals as far as, you know, how they're playing and skill wise and talent wise and everything. So,
well, did you see that the Cardinals got struck out 18 times tonight?
No,
19 times. I'm sorry.
Nice. Good. Good for them.
That's a record for the number of strikeouts in a single game by the Cardinals, but
good, good. Yeah. They got a bunch. They've got like, I swear to God, like 3/4 of their team is hitting over like 340. It's so sickening.
Well, tonight's game will take some of that down a little bit, but, anyway, I mean, Lester looked pretty darn good in that game up until I think it was the sixth inning where he started. It might have been the fifth where he gave up the back-to-back homers, but he did give up back-to-back homers in that game eventually. And at one point, he was really getting squeezed by the ump, and he was showing a lot of frustration. I was very surprised that neither Madden nor Lester got kicked out of that game. Did you see that part?
I didn't. No, I was coaching.
Oh, okay. But yeah, it was pretty bad. I mean, you could see on Twitter some people were posting K-zone charts.
And
there were like 4 or 5 balls that were in the zone. Huh. 4 or 5 called balls that were in the zone that Lester threw at one point. So people were posting pictures of that and being like ball 5, strike 5, take your base and stuff like that.
Yeah, I came in and saw as he gave up those back-to-back home runs, but he also did that in the last inning he pitched, and he was nearing 100 pitches. So
right.
I think that could kind of be an excuse for it too.
Sure. I think he could have even gone a little bit deeper in the game if the umpiring shenanigans hadn't happened. But
seems overall, like we're seeing a lot of that this year, doesn't it?
It seems like there has been a lot more than usual, but Anyway, that was, but all the games this week so far have been really exciting, except maybe with the exception tonight, which is kind of more of a pitcher's duel, but.
Well, but that's what yesterday's game started off as too.
Right. Because, highly touted, pitcher for the, I keep saying highly touted. I wish I could say that a little bit more. Noah Syndergaard. Syndergaard started the game for the Mets. And so that was his major league debut last night. And so, yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Like, it was Arrieta and Syndergaard kind of going head to head and showing their stuff. And Arrieta had an amazing outing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. On Sunday night's episode, I talked about why the last two Arrieta starts were not indicative of how he's pitching and how he's going to pitch this year. And I assured the listeners that there is no reason to be concerned about Arrieta because of those two starts. And if Jake is listening, I would like to thank him for making me look like I know what I'm talking about. Thanks, Jake. Or Jacob.
Please, it's Jacob. but anyway, the Cubs broke through in the sixth inning for four runs in that game. As Coughlin hit a homer at one point with it was a two-run homer, and a couple other guys with multi-hit games were Soler and Castro. They had two hits apiece. Man, I feel bad for Matt Caesar. He's really scuffling. He's getting like one at bat a game basically, and dude just can't seem to get a hit to save his life. But well,
it's hard to get into a routine when you're only getting one at bat.
I like seeing him with the club. He's just gonna have trouble getting more consistent playing time and at bats. But anyway, it ended up being a 6-1 game. The Cubs won pretty handily in that one, and that was nice to see. Brian also hit another home. Brian's game was ridiculous. Yes. I mean, did you see his stat line? Oh my goodness. Dude, okay, he hit a triple for one, so he showed that he could kind of stay with the pitch and hit it the other way, and he hit it into the right field corner, and he legged out a triple.
I call that respecting 270.
Oh man. Yeah, he's just been like hustling his butt off. Generally speaking, I mean, he's narrowly beaten out a couple close plays at first, one tonight and again one last night maybe. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think he's about as fun to watch on the base paths as he is at the plate. And he's not an especially fast guy. He just hustles. He seems early when he came up, it seemed like he kind of got lucky on the base paths some, you know, like he kind of made mistakes, but it seemed to work out. Especially I seem to remember like in a series with the Pirates were kind of throwing the ball all over the place. And so he kind of benefited from that. But so to kind of go back to what you were saying about his legging out the throws, to first, I was listening to the radio broadcast while I was mowing last night, and Pat and Coombdog could not stop raving about the role that he played in the third inning. So he came up with two outs and he hustled down the line to beat out the throw from the third baseman. That extended the inning. So then Rizzo walked and Montero walked, and then Soler. Yeah. So there were two outs. I think I already said that. So Rizzo walked, Montero walked, and Soler worked it to a full count before he, ended up flying out. So even though the Cubs didn't score, Bryant hustling down the line and beating that throw extended the inning by 15 or 20 pitches. And that's huge. I mean, that's basically like taking an inning away from Syndergaard, especially a hard throwing pitcher. And those are the little things that can really help a team and, just get the starter out of there, get their pitch count up, especially when it's a good starter like that, and get into the bullpen. And, as Cubs fans, we know that even when a bullpen looks like it's really good or it's supposed to be good, they're unpredictable. And so just all around, it's just so amazing to watch this kid play and to think he's, 23 years old, and the impact that he has on a game, it just by doing something like that. It's just, it's amazing. And this is actually last night was the first time that I watched some of the post game press conference. I just haven't been able to watch that many of them. Mm-hmm. And Madden, I wish I had the quote in front of me or whatever, but he just kind of said like, this is Respect 90. And he said, I don't really understand why people don't do that. You know, you look at how much of a difference it makes. So I don't know. Joe Madden is so freaking awesome. I wish I could just sit in a room and just let him talk, you know. I don't know. But I also saw, speaking of Chris Bryant, I saw a tweet from Mark Gonzalez today, and he said that Chris Bryant has 20 walks in 24 games. That's the seventh highest in the National League, and all of the players ahead of him have played in at least 30 games. So at least six more games than he has.
Wow, man, that is impressive. In case you missed it, I mean, I guess I just didn't say it aloud. His final stat line there in that game was I'm on the wrong game.
No, he was 4 for 5. He was a double short of the cycle, and then he also drew a walk. So he had a single that he beat out, and then he hit that triple and the homer. And man, he crushed that home run. And then he also drew a walk. So
anyway, he's just pretty hot at the plate right now. I should give some props to Starlin Castro, who's really been driving in a lot of runs lately. In the past 9 games, he has 8 RBI.
Isn't it so refreshing to see a team play well, and you almost. It's not that you're not paying attention to what Rizzo and Castro are doing, but it's like they just kind of like blend in with everything. You know,
because there's so many other people playing up to their level.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like. Whereas before, I mean, it just seemed like peaks and valleys when the line, you know.
Well, if those two didn't do well, that team looked terrible.
Oh, I mean, goodness, you know, did they ever.
And yeah. How about, I don't have stats pulled up in front of me, but I've been so impressed by Montero. or Montero. I think that's how they said it. Montero, yeah. He'll be Montero or Miggy to me.
Miggy Mont.
He I guess it'd be Miggy Mont. But he's batting? I think he's batting somewhere around 290, I think. And that's up. I mean, the last couple years, I think his batting average was more like 250. I think it's like 30 or 40 points higher than it was the last couple of years. However, I'm pretty sure he had a year like 2011 maybe or 2010 where he had like a batting average up close to 300.
Yeah, that would be 09. He had 294.
Okay, yeah. But I mean, he's showing power, and he just, I mean, we heard all about the pitch framing and all that aspect, you know, of what he was going to add to this team. But I think he's kind of like, and I don't know this obviously, but just from his like presence on Twitter and stuff like that, doesn't he seem like one of those guys that's just like a really good clubhouse guy? Like he just seems like somebody that like kind of picks up the guys around him and is like kind of like more of a vocal leader maybe than you would expect like Rizzo to be or Castro or somebody like that. I mean, obviously I do not know the clubhouse dynamics that goes without saying, but that's just kind of like my, I guess, take on what I think might be going on with that team. He just seems like a very positive, a very energetic, and I don't know.
It's like kind him. Of a life-giving player to have on your team.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Like his batting average dipped a little bit the past couple of seasons, but it seems like just by and large, I mean, his career batting average is .264.
Right. So, for a catcher, that's not, you know.
No. Yeah. And he's had, you know, 16, 18, 15 home run seasons. So he's going to give the Cubs some homers. He's going to, you know, he's going to do a lot of things pretty well for the Cubs, I think. And I'm glad to have him on the team because he brings a lot of intangibles to the team, like you said.
Yeah. I still can't believe here we are in the middle of May and we're still carrying 3 catchers.
I know. I didn't expect that at all.
I mean, To be honest, I've had a, kind of a busy little stretch here, and so I'm catching as much of these. I'm listening to more of it on the radio than I've been able to watch on TV. I don't feel like I've seen very much of Castillo recently.
No,
am I imagining that? Because I can't even.
No, you're not imagining that. In fact, I'm kind of wondering if he even got into the first two games in the Mets series. Yeah, he did. He pinch hit in the first game. But yeah, I mean, just his appearance. Yeah, it seems like he's kind of flying under the radar a little bit. I don't think he got into the game tonight at all. I mean, the game on Tuesday.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. So yeah, we haven't seen much of him, but yeah, I'm pretty surprised about that. Speaking of trades, and not that this has much to do with the catchers, I'm sorry, I guess we have a voicemail about this.
We do. Although I do want to say one more thing before we move off this topic.
Sure.
You know, we're going over a lot of the positives right now. And one thing that kind of stands out to me that I think is troubling for me or kind of bugs me is that I really hope the back end of this rotation can get a couple of good starts. You know, I think they have 16 quality starts, and Wood and Hendricks combined are worth 3 of those. So I understand that the back of the end of the rotation, obviously they're the back end for a reason, you know? However, I feel like if the Cubs are going to run off a number of wins in a row, they've got to get some good starts from those two. They're not going to have a sustained winning streak if those two can't at least string a couple of good starts together or just permissible starts or whatever, you know, just average. It's just, I don't know. I think that's one thing that's kind of holding this team back right now is that They're playing really well when you got Lester, you know, in the last, four starts from Lester or whatever. It's kind of like, okay, they play well with Lester. Granted, Arrieta had a couple of sketchy ones in there. But I don't know. It just feels like the 1-3 were good. We do well in those games. And then 4 and 5, it just kind of doesn't.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Hendricks did have a good outing on
he
Sunday.
Did. Yeah.
But he only went 5.1 innings, and he had given up 0 earned runs. The game was kind of close at that point. So
it just kind of feels like we need like a couple times through the rotation, both of those guys get some good starts, go deeper into the games, you know, and kind of, just kind of start building some momentum, because it's hard to, it would just be really nice to roll off like 8 wins in a row. I mean, we've got ground to make up with the Cardinals, and we're kind of holding steady with them right now. But every time they lose, we lose. And every time they win, we win. So we're not making up ground. So.
Yeah. Except when they're head to head, but you're right. I mean, it's going to take those, you know, numbers four and five pitching well for the Cubs to reel off a nice long winning streak. So
yeah.
And I think that'll happen at some point.
I do too.
Obviously,
yeah.
they're gonna have their rough times, but I do think at least I expect Hendricks to do better, and I hope Wood does.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting to the point with Wood where I'm almost kind of done with him. I don't know. I kind of want to see Wada, but
sure. Or a Don Roach, if you will.
Yeah, I'll take her. Well, Watt would probably slide in there better, but yeah, okay. So we have a voicemail to play, and like I said, we'll normally include voicemails afterwards, but this is kind of a question, and so I thought we'd work it in here. So here it is.
Hi, this is Joshua from Northern New Jersey. I just wanted to know, do you think that the rumors of the Cubs and Mets making a trade is true, and who would they go after?
All right, Josh. Well, of course, with the Mets coming to town, I mean, this was a rumor that we heard a lot in the off season, but with the Mets coming to town, of course, the rumors start swirling again. And Judd even even address this. He was quoted by Patrick Mooney as saying, "We've had conversations with them. We haven't made a deal yet, but there's been matches that made sense, and I'm sure we'll talk to them in the future." And so he even goes on, he even went on to say that he thinks it'll happen at some point. So, of course, everybody is reading into this big time. But, I mean, if you think about it, it'll happen at some point is so vague, you know, like...
At some point, the Cubs and the right. Mets will work out a deal.
In 2027, the Cubs and the Mets are going to make a trade. So, anyway, I wouldn't read into it too much at all. I mean, I think it's, by and large, I think you said this yourself, Corey, a product of just the mostly the Mets being in town, a chance to look at the pitching that they have, because... That's how the Cubs and Mets kind of match up as trade partners, as the Mets have a lot of young pitching. The Cubs have a lot of young hitters, young position players.
And the Mets are in desperate need of offense.
Right.
I mean, they are a very pitching heavy team right now. Their offense is bad, especially with David Wright injured. I mean, they're not good.
Yeah, with injuries, they're even worse. So that's why the two teams do match up pretty well. Now, various people have written articles about, you know, for example, Jesse Rogers, which I don't know how big of a fan I am of Jesse, but at any rate, he wrote an article entitled "Starlin Castro to the Mets Still Makes Sense." So it's articles like that that add a lot of fuel to the fire that the Cubs and the Mets eventually will match up on some of these prospects that seem to fit together.
So basically... The gist of this is don't read too much into it, but in doing so, I'm going to read a lot into it. So I don't think it's Castro. I think I was okay. Can you read Jed Hoyer's statements again?
Sure. He said, "We've had conversations with them. We haven't made a deal yet, but there's been matches that made sense, and I'm sure we'll talk to them in the future."
Okay. So here's okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
that's all right.
That's kind of what I was thinking is, okay, so there have been matchups that made sense, but they're going to look at it in the future. To me, that says Javier Baez. That's how if I was going to read into this thing, I would think, well, now's not the time. Like, they probably are like, you know, again, I've never sat through a phone call between two front offices, but I'm going to assume
I did a few times last week.
Okay. But... Well, then maybe you can tell me how wrong I am with this. I'm kind of wondering if maybe it's like, you know, the Cubs are like, okay, well, we'd be interested in getting rid of Baez, but obviously they're not going to do it now. They're not going to do it when, you know, they're not going to sell low with him. And so I wonder if it's like, okay, so if Baez kind of does these things, then this is who, you know, I kind of wonder if there aren't some like hypothetical agreements, not agreements. That's a wrong word to use. Hypothetical, just kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. Help me out here, Andy.
Like situations or scenarios that would trigger a trade.
Right. Well, like if they were like, okay, so if Baez does this, we would be interested in we'd be willing to give up this. You know, maybe right. The Cubs are like, well, we want to see more from this player. So I kind of wonder if there's not these like, okay, let's see how these things play out. You know, these are the types of trades. These are the types of players we might give up for somebody if they turn out the way that everybody hopes they do.
Right.
So that's kind of what I read into it, is it's like, I kind of wonder if the discussions have been there, obviously. And if it was like established major league talent, then they would just make the move if both sides were kind of on the same page. So that's what makes me think this has more to do with like maybe somebody like Javi.
Sure, man. But giving the idea of trading Castro to me kind of seems like folly a little bit. I mean, they have, obviously then they would probably slide Russell over to shortstop, and he would be great defensively, but I think a little bit of a letdown as far as hitting,
especially at this point in his career. I mean, especially like this year.
Yeah. So I don't like that idea. I mean, of course, I do like the idea of gosh, would I like to have, you know, like a Syndergaard or something like that? Yeah, heck yeah. But I don't know. It's just, it's tough to predict.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So we do have a few questions that I missed from
before we get to those, Corey. Oh, yeah, can I throw something in there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of Patrick Mooney, I talked about him earlier. He actually, I don't know if he wrote this article. Anyway, it's a CSN article, by Tony Andracki. He analyzed Cubs through the first part of 2015. We're 1/5 of the way through the season. Did you know that? We are 20% of the 2015 baseball season is in the books.
Man, that's gone so fast.
Yeah. And so
it's amazing how fast it goes when it's interesting and fun to pay attention to.
Right. Yeah. And so he wrote that 1/5 of the way through the season, the Cubs are on pace for 85 wins. Last season, the fewest number of wins by a team that made the playoffs was 88, which would have been the Pirates, the Giants, and the A's. In 2013, the fewest number of wins by a playoff team was 90, which was the Reds. So I just thought that was interesting. I didn't know if you'd seen anything like that yet.
Yeah, I think they may be on pace for 85 wins, but I still think, I think that's kind of around what I predicted. I think I said 83 to 85 wins for this season. But I still think, like, if I had an optimistic Corey would say, I think 88 wins is doable, especially if they can get on a hot streak. Because one of the things that I was kind of unsure about heading into this season, and even, you know, up until maybe three weeks ago, was that I was afraid that this being a team this young, that if they hit a skid, that they maybe wouldn't really know how to work themselves out of it. But sure. We've seen them look pretty bad for a couple games in a row, and it doesn't seem to affect them. And so I kind of think that extended winning streaks are going to be a lot more likely than extended losing streaks. And this team, I think this team is a team that can get, by all, you know, by what we've seen so far, I think they can get insanely hot at some point.
Sure. And like you said, I mean, like, we get pretty down in the dumps after Saturday's loss to the Brewers, the 4-12 loss. And then they go on to lose against the Brewers on Sunday too. And then, you know, you're like, okay, here we go. Here comes the losing streak. And then they reel off a couple straight against the Mets, you know, right after that. So it's like each day seems to be a new day in the, you know, they had looked fresh at the beginning of the week coming off of those two kind of demoralizing losses. And so maybe it is those guys like Montero and David Ross and, you know, players like that are kind of, you know, picking the youngsters up and, you know, keeping them with the, you know, having a fresh mindset and, you know, get out there and let's win this game today type of thing.
Yeah. Yep. Those questions that I missed from the weekend episode, Sean is at SWaters84 and he asks, why can't closers pitch well in non-save situations? It's a good question. And I think it's important to keep in mind that closers are a different breed of people. They just kind of operate differently. I think it takes a certain type of a person to be able to thrive in those high pressure situations. So I suppose you could look at these non-pressure situations and think that maybe they don't thrive in non-save situations. I don't necessarily think that's the case, though. I don't think there's a whole lot of evidence that closers pitch worse in non-save situations. Maybe it kind of stands out a little bit more to us. But I don't know. I should have really done my research, and I did a little bit. You know, I was just kind of curious, but it didn't really seem like anything stood out terribly. But I was thinking that another thing to consider is that you pitch in a different manner in different situations.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. Go ahead.
No, go ahead and elaborate on it if you want.
Sure. I mean, I was going to say, like, if you have like a 6-1 lead or something like that, and you come in as a closer for whatever reason, you know, your mode of operation should be to challenge the hitters, right? I mean, you need to throw strikes,
right?
And you need to really go after them and pound the strike zone, basically. Whereas when you come in with a, you know, very close game as a closer in a safe situation, there's a little bit more like nibbling and location work that you do.
Right.
And so it's, yeah, you're right. I mean, like the way that you approach just pitching, your method of attack is totally different. And so they're not used to the former method, you know, mode of attack as much.
Yeah. And I wonder too, if it's not just somebody is just built for high pressure situations. You know, we've seen plenty of pitchers that are closers that just seem like they're built for that. That's their makeup. They're made for that. And maybe if it's not there on top of, the location stuff and things like that, you know, they're not used to pitching to contact and everything. And so maybe that just kind of rattles them a little bit too. I don't know. I think there might be something to it. We probably could have really dug in deep and analyze stats, but
well, nope. There was some game recently where I thought that Rondon was gonna work himself into a, well, I mean, it wouldn't be a safe situation, but I thought he was gonna really like take what was a 5-point lead and make it a like a 2-point lead or something. And it just seems, I don't know, but there's just, it seems to be something to this, and I feel like if we did dig into it that we would find some numbers to back it up.
You just called it a point lead.
I did.
Yes. you've been watching too much hockey and basketball, I think.
Oh my. Gee whiz. I have no,
well, even license. Hockey, I guess it's goals.
But I have no license to make fun of any commentators after that.
But I found it humorous because it reminds me of a Herbert Clifford line, so.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm glad I could amuse you. I'm going to cry myself to sleep tonight, though.
So the other one here is from Michael, who is at MJ Coles 15. He says, how are the Cubs hitting in the seventh inning and later? And do any individual stats stick out? He said, huge fan. Keep up the great work, guys.
Yeah. Man, I'm glad you had me look into this, Michael, because it's not good. they haven't really hit well in the seventh inning or later. Their slash line is 231, 297, and 359. And so,
however, they are better than they were last year.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they're in the middle of the pack. They're 15th out of 30th as a team before tonight's game. Last year they were 27th out of 30. So, I mean, it's kind of funny because I guess you looked at it and you thought they were bad. I looked at it and I thought they were good. I was like,
well, they have a 26% strikeout rate in innings 7-9 and only 24% in innings 4-6. They actually have about the same for as they do 7-9 in 1-3, but for whatever reason, they're striking out way less in innings 4-6. And maybe that has something to do with, you know, seeing the starter for the second, third, fourth time.
Yeah, but Michael asks about if any individual stats stick out. The one that sticks out to me is Anthony Rizzo. His slash line in the seventh inning and later is 361, 477, 444.
Dang.
That's the one that stood out to me. Maybe that's why I felt good about it, you know, and the fact that they've improved 12 positions in baseball compared to last year. I guess maybe that's why I was a little bit more content with what I saw.
Yeah, so I mean, that means the rest of the team is pretty abysmal then.
Yeah, Castro's batting 236. 341, 419, and Bryant, though, he's batting within seventh inning or later, 296, 441, 481. So, I mean, your big bats are doing pretty well. Yeah, so I guess what kind of stands out to me then is that not only are the power hitters doing fairly well, but the bulk of the at-bats are with players that are doing well. You know, I mean, Castro, 236, it's not where you'd want him to be, but with an on-base percentage of 341, I mean, it's not terrible. So I think it's kind of a good sign that they've improved over last year, and I think we're going to see that continue to improve too. I mean, some of that comes with gelling as a team and stuff.
I'd be pretty surprised and disappointed if they hadn't improved over last year.
Yeah. Oh, because, yeah.
I mean, we talked about, didn't they not have any comebacks in the ninth inning last year?
Right. They were like, what was it, 78 and, or 0 and 78 or 0 and 72 or something like that. Perhaps the scariest stat I've ever seen.
Yeah.
This team has comebacks. I mean, they've already done it this year, but
right. Well, I mean, after they were 0-30 last year, I bet you anything, I watched most of the other ninth inning games where they were down the rest of the season, and so why did I do that?
I don't know. I guess the same could be said about why do we still watch Cubs games when they haven't won a World Series since 1908. But it's, you just want to be there in case it happens. It's still, it's your love. Your love kept you watching, Andy.
Yeah, I guess that's a good spin for it.
Well, we aren't doing a photo caption contest tonight. The truth is I completely forgot to post a photo until this afternoon. I guess I'm not back in the flow of doing photo caption contests. So I've been talking about this listener survey. We only need about 20 more of those filled out. So if you've not done it yet, we would really appreciate it if you did. It will take you 30 seconds, literally 30 seconds. So please go do it right now, and then I will be able to stop talking about it, and I won't have to mention it anymore. And I think that's what you want to. This episode was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. If you enjoy our podcast, check out our Patreon campaign. It helps us pay the podcasting bills, and it helps us improve yours and everyone's IVMV experience. There are perks for pledging at different levels, so check that out at patreon.com/IVMV, patreon.com/IVMV. And I know I've been saying for a couple of weeks that I'm going to mail out these perks. I have them down here now. I realize that I don't have the right shipping containers, boxes to send stuff. So now I have to order boxes. So I have not forgotten. Those things are coming, and we'll get everything out. We'll get caught up with everything. So the Cubs will wrap up this series with the Mets Thursday, and then the Pirates come to Wrigley for the weekend. We'll be back on Sunday with another episode. And until then, go Cubs!
Hi guys, this is Lon Marshall from Kelowna, Iowa, home of the Kelowna Brewing Company. Just wanted to tell you that I just listened to your first caller, and I was laughing so hard I was crying. Keep up the good work. Love the podcast.